The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, good morning. How are you doing?
Boker Tov. There's so many things that I want to start with even before we get into the meaty bits. I wanted to talk about food experiments in space, but I have to talk, first of all, about winter storm Elpis, which is apparently on our doorstep and approaching Israel, not to be confused with a rock singer of a similar name.
I was just going
to
say, is it Elpis or Elvis?
It's Elpis. Now, for those who wonder what Elpis is actually, it's a name that's been given to this winter storm that's approaching Israel. And it's actually a Greek god.
Spirit of hope.
Yeah, exactly. Spirit of hope. Mm. And apparently one of the last, if not the last item that was in that Pandora's box, which we talk about so frequently, that's where the name Elpis comes from. Mm. And it's a name that's been given by the newly formed Mediterranean Storm Naming Group, which is spelled, East Mediterranean. Let me correct myself. The East Mediterranean Storm Naming Group.
Look, no disrespect, but they can't work very often, can they?
It's a little bit like being a weather forecaster in this particular area. You work sort of half year if you're lucky.
Half day.
And the rest of the time, you know, you just have a standard weather forecast. But this is a group that was recently put together between Greece, Cyprus, and Israel to apparently do exactly that, name storms. So Elpis is one of the first storms that they've given a name to. People in Israel saying, if the storm has a name, it must be very serious.
Yes,
so the answer is, it is very serious, because actually up to 20 centimeters of snow is expected in Jerusalem. And it's almost kind of rivals that Canadian blizzard that we heard about last week. Lots of snow expected on the Hermon and in the Golan. Special instructions have already been issued about schools, many schools in the northern part of Israel, in the Golan area, actually not even going to school today. In Jerusalem, they've officially decided that 3 o'clock is the latest that any school child can be in formal education environment, and that everybody needs to go home after that. People being advised to remain in the vicinity of their homes and not to go out unless absolutely necessary. So we're expecting quite a heavy snowfall and, of course, stormy weather to go along with it. In the meantime, I have to tell you that it's very, very calm indeed, albeit somewhat cool for an Israeli winter, even for an Israeli winter's day, starting around the central part of Israel, around 8 or 9 degrees this morning. So quite cool. But we're all waiting with bated breath for this storm Elpis to arrive. I hope that we don't get disappointed, because now with all that billing, hopes that, you know, the snow will ultimately arrive and satisfy at least the children who have a lot of interest in getting out there and throwing snowballs and things like that. So we're expecting that later this afternoon. We did say yesterday, when we spoke about this mission to space by the Israeli astronaut, that we're going to talk a little bit about some of the food experiments, at least, that will be conducted on the International Space Station. And the first one I want to talk about is the idea of growing hummus in space, growing chickpeas effectively in space. This is an experiment designed by Dr. Yonatan Weintraub, who is an Israeli scientist, and he is doing so in conjunction with scientists at Stanford University. And the idea is to be able to grow plants in outer space in general in order to feed those people who might be there. So in other words, this is not something that's applicable to us down here beings, because we already have chickpeas and they grow, and we're able to eat our hummus quite freely. But the idea is to make this available to the astronauts on the International Space Station and potentially beyond that. And so he's put together this thing that is called a miniaturized greenhouse, and he's going to try and check whether chickpeas can actually grow in space. And the reason that he has chosen chickpeas as opposed to any other plant is because they have a very high nutrient content, and because also they grow very fast. And in his words, because, of course, you can make hummus out of them. So that's going to be one of the experiments that our new astronaut is going to be undertaking on the International Space Station at the end of March, early April, when he will spend his week there. It's just one of the ones we'll talk about. There's some other food ones as well. We will continue to talk about those in the coming days.
Absolutely incredible. All right, let's talk about the uncertainty around Israel's COVID policies. Look, Israel's not the only country in the world that is floundering right now as everybody looks to figure out the next way forward.
I mean, we've almost pretty much continuing at the peak of the number of infections of the Omicron wave. Tsunami, some people call it, more than 80,000 people having been diagnosed on a daily basis over the last couple of days, newly infected with Omicron. Some people not for the first time. Some people apparently have been reinfected with Omicron. And what we've generally found is that people who've been vaccinated have had less symptoms and felt better. Those people who are not quite so vaccinated have had it a little bit more severely. There has been a dramatic increase in the number of people who are seriously ill. That's jumped from a low number of around 80 before this wave to now tenfold, 880, something like that. At the latest count, and people are predicting that it might even reach the peak and create a new record of more than 1,200 people who are in hospital seriously ill. The hospitals are not necessarily feeling like they can't cope with the situation in terms of the numbers. The main problem with the hospitals is the number of people who are in isolation, who would be working in hospitals, nurses and doctors and people, staff from the hospital who have been forced into isolation as a result of having been infected by the virus themselves and so can't be at work. And there's a massive shortage of staff. But the real uncertainties surround two main issues. The first issue surrounds children at school. Because of the number of kindergarten children in particular who are not vaccinated, and because the policy says that if an unvaccinated person comes into contact with somebody who has been diagnosed with the virus, then that person, that unvaccinated person, is forced into quarantine for a period of 5 days. And as a result of that, many young school children have been forced into quarantine, and has created havoc within the schooling system. The contrary is true, which means that anybody who is vaccinated and who comes into contact with somebody who's been diagnosed with a virus can have a test. If the test is negative, then they are free to continue their lives according to the rules without the need to go into quarantine. So the government has decided that they would like rather to implement a twice weekly testing system for children. Sunday and Wednesday, every child in Israel will be tested. And if they are negative in that twice weekly test, then they are free to continue to do their business as usual, even if they might have come into contact with somebody who's infected. That is due to be the new rule that is supposed to come into existence tomorrow. Right. But still, there seems to be a lot of reluctance around whether that's a sensible idea. And the main reluctance comes from the fact that there's new evidence that shows that children who, even if they might be asymptomatic when they get the virus, do suffer longer-term effects of having had the virus. And so whereas the government was saying, well, let's just roll the children, let them get the virus, many of them don't show any symptoms anyway, all good. Now the medical staff, the medical scientists are saying, well, hang on a second, even if they don't show symptoms, they might suffer in later life, there might be some longer term effects. So there's been a little bit of uncertainty around whether tomorrow they will choose to go with this new system or not. The other uncertainty surrounds the fourth vaccination. The over 60s and the medical teams have all been mandated to get the fourth vaccination. The uptake has been mediocre. Some people quite enthusiastic and went in immediately to get the fourth vaccination. Others not so enthusiastic. So it's not been quite as positively received in that community. And it hasn't been rolled out to people under 60 because the results are still not overly convincing. When I say the results are not overly convincing, I don't mean that they're negative. It just, there is still some discussion as to whether the impact, the number of antibodies that are created as a result of this fourth vaccination, are significant enough to justify rolling out rolling this out across the rest of the population. So those are the two uncertainties. Some groups are saying very strongly that we should go with the fourth vaccine. It can't do any harm. Let's just do it. Others are saying, well, it doesn't seem like people are going to be too enthusiastic about it. And in any event, the results are mixed. Some very, very positive results showing massive increases in the number of antibodies. Some other results not quite so convincing. So because of the scientific evidence that is unconvincing at the moment, it's not overwhelmingly in one direction or the other. There is prevarication within the government as to what needs to be done next. And it's kind of on a day-by-day basis at the moment. So we're waiting to see what they decide upon next.
Absolutely. And Science says, why don't we rather look at South Africa for a guide on COVID? It seems to have fared way better than Israel with Omicron's wave, with 40% vaccination rate and no kids vaccinated. But I think there's also the factor, Unsigned, that Israel is in the middle of winter. And that really does make a massive, massive difference. We are outdoors. Everything is open. People are in South Africa spending a lot of time outside. It does make a big difference. He says, or she says, I'm starting to feel like this is all about money and politics. There is that sense, but I do think that at the end, at the foremost concern of most governments is about trying to get people, keep people safe and get economies back working. So I'm not sure that the intentions or the goals actually are any different, really.
Yeah, I think the question, as I understand it, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong, I understood that there was something of a lockdown in South Africa during the peak of the Omicron wave.
Hardly. Restrictions. Very, very few. In fact, it was quite remarkable that they didn't increase. The same restrictions that are in place now and that were in place even before Omicron were there. They didn't really increase it. But again, very, very different, given the fact that we were early with Omicron, so they could see that the severity in terms of hospitalizations weren't there, and that we're in summer, and that might even make a difference to people's reaction. People's immunity is a little bit higher in the summer. There's a lot of factors that I think place South Africa in a very good position around Omicron. We actually don't know why South Africa did so much better, because the number of severe cases in Israel are higher than we've seen. We've hardly seen any cases, or literally a handful of cases that needed to be hospitalized.
I think the winter factor is important, and just not only because people are indoors and on top of each other more due to winter, but don't forget that the flu this year has been pretty severe, and that at one point people were saying, well, this Omicron is just like a flu. And in fact, there are more people in hospital suffering from flu than there are suffering from Omicron. So that certainly was the case up until quite recently, where the flu has been really severe. And even though they did try to roll out a flu vaccination relatively broadly across the population, encourage people to take it up, I don't know that the uptake was really as good as extensive as they'd hoped for. So that's just another factor. But all agreed that, you know, we need to learn from each other, and that South Africa might have a point. Although if there isn't really a reason that you can put your finger on to say that's why it was successful, it's very hard to learn lessons.
President Herzog will visit the UAE, the United Arab Emirates, next week. That's massive.
It is massive, and it's just, you know, continues to be massive. In other words, it's just a continuing story along the lines of, you know, opening up borders with the United Arab Emirates for following the groundbreaking peace agreement that was entered into already a couple of years ago now, with the UAE coming on for a couple of years. But the great news is that President Isaac Herzog will become the first Israeli president to visit the United Arab Emirates, and he will go along to the Expo in Dubai, and he will open Israel Day. Now, Israel has a massive stand at the Dubai Expo for the very first time, and this is a big event in Dubai, and he will go along to open Israel Day next week. He will spend 2 days in the UAE, not only visiting Dubai, but also visiting Abu Dhabi. He will he's set to meet the Crown Prince of Abu Dhabi, who is Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed. And he will also meet the president and the vice prime minister of Abu Dhabi, and as well as meeting with Jewish community and other local officials. And so this is just for 2 days that he will travel to the UAE. But again, it's just another fantastic step. It's another great groundbreaking event in this, what is really a massive story around the peace agreement that Israel has entered into with United Arab Emirates. I mean, we use the UAE as the primary example of a great, you know, peace agreement. But the, of course, there were a number of others around that. But the peace with the UAE has most certainly been the most, has had the most impact on our society and on our political political spectrum in general.
And that's unfortunately all we have time for. It is 8:01. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem. It's 101.9 Chai FM. Anthony Reich, we'll catch you tomorrow morning.